And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn, the somewhat wet Tuesday edition, as we've been getting quite a bit of rain around our area over the past few hours. No surprise, the folks said we would be getting it. We don't expect it to rain constantly all day today, but during the mid and late morning hours, we got a pretty good rain here in the Butler area. So it's a wet Tuesday. Be careful if you're out driving around to slick spots on roadways, especially after we've had several days of sunny and dry weather. And you get a rainy day, get sunshine in the heat, that tends to bring some of the oil and the tar up to the surface of roadways, asphalt roadways, and then you get the first rain and it gets a little slick. So be careful of that. Open talk to begin the program today. We have a little bit of time for that. We're also going to be talking later on today about bananas, believe it or not. Bananas. Yes, the fruit, bananas. Some fun facts about bananas. I did not know that bananas are an endangered species. I know, that was the first reaction that I had as well. And bananas are slightly radioactive. You have to be kidding me. We'll be talking with Steve Gellerman a little bit later on the program today. He calls himself the top banana. He's also invented something called banana milk or something. We'll talk with Steve a little bit later on the program today. Weird banana facts. Fun facts about bananas. Also, later on the program today, novelist Jane Healy, talking about her novel, The Beantown Girls. Pretty interesting. So, all of that to come, but a little bit of open talk on the first portion of the program today. One of our sponsors on It's Your Turn today is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. What do? They package your items for shipping. You can trust them. I've trusted them. I've utilized their services. It's fast, it's convenient, and it's very affordable. And what a convenience. You know, you take your items up to Gone Postal Butler, and they package them up and ship them for you. You don't have to worry about finding the right size box or the bubble wrap or the mailing labels or that special tape or any of that sort of thing. Just take it up. They'll do it. Gone Postal Butler is located in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. It's right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants on Newcastle Road. It's easy to find. They're open Monday through Friday. In addition to packaging your items for shipping, they have other services that they offer as well. Copying, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. They even have an official notary. Open Monday through Friday. That's Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. One of the things we were talking about, it was yesterday on the program. I was trying to think whether it was last week or yesterday. Tattoos. And what do you think about tattoos? And do you mind the tattoos? Do you think that someone is stereotyped when they have a tattoo? If you're out and about, whether you're shopping or wherever, and you see someone with a tattoo, does that change your image of that person? Well, we were talking about it because they have become much, much more common over the past decade or so than they ever were. You know, there was a time that tattoos, mainly guys within the service got a tattoo, came back with a tattoo, and now it's men and women, and a remarkable percentage. We were talking about yesterday, millennials, almost 40% of them have tattoos, and half of them have more than one. Well, we were talking about it, and one of our callers yesterday was talking about the age limit. I did not know that there was one. He thought it was 18 that in Pennsylvania, people under the age of 18 could not get tattoos. Well, it turns out, and we appreciate Larry doing a little bit more research on this after the program today, he said it is legal for minors in Pennsylvania as young as age 14 to get a tattoo or a body piercing, for that matter, with parental permission. And I guess the parent has to be present during the procedure for these minors. So I wondered when we were talking about that because, as I mentioned to him, I've seen a lot of young people that look like they're younger than 18 that have tattoos. So with parental permission and apparently with the parent present during the procedure, minors can get tattoos. That would be from age 14 and up. It's the current law here in Pennsylvania. We were also talking about swimming and how you very seldom see tattoos on swimmers. Many other athletes, especially basketball players, some of them are covered in tattoos. More and more baseball players. Swimmers, no. And one of the reasons is that swimming is not recommended for anyone getting a tattoo for at least a month after the procedure due to the risk of infection from chlorine or bacteria. Well, there you go. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525, open talk on this segment of the program today. Hats off, I say, to local state senator Joe Pittman. Joe Pittman represents the 41st Senatorial District in Harrisburg, if the name doesn't sound familiar. He's the guy who took over from Don White, who retired earlier this year. Senator Joe Pittman plans to introduce legislation in Harrisburg that would reduce the amount of funding that's diverted each year from transportation improvement projects to support state police operations. This was a wacko deal to begin with, as far as I'm concerned, in the state legislature. I mean, state troopers, they're of vital... Obviously, we could not exist without state troopers here in Pennsylvania. Goes without saying, they're a vital part of state government. But whoever came up with the idea to fund state police operations out of transportation money is ridiculous. Now, obviously, a part of what state police do is to ensure safety on highways. But that's only a part. You know, I'm sure they're checking for speeders and other violators of driving laws. You know, you don't have your seatbelt on, you don't have kids in a safety seat, and so on and so forth. But it's only part of their work. My goodness. State police are involved in criminal activities, criminal investigations. They're called out on all sorts of things. Crime, investigate crime. So to fund them out of the motor license fund is silly. Well, state lawmakers had come up with a plan to slowly divest themselves of doing that, but the time frame was rather ridiculous. It would take many, many years. And Senator Joe Pittman, newly in office, says let's speed up the whole process. So that's what he's proposing in Harrisburg. And he emphasizes that it would not reduce funding for state police. Not at all. It would rather shift the source of support to the general fund budget instead of taking it out of transportation. And I agree with Senator Pittman. You know, we have enough road and bridge projects that we need to get done. You know, let's just call it like it is. If you want to fund the state police, obviously you do. Make it all part of the general fund budget. So hats off, I say. And I hope this speeds through the state legislature, but who knows? You know, in Harrisburg, as in Washington, sometimes senators and representatives come up with good ideas, And for one reason or another, the leadership does not want to bring them up. We've seen that happen locally here in Pennsylvania. We've seen it happen at the federal level, right? Mitch McConnell, the leader of the U.S. Senate, Republican Mitch McConnell, refuses to bring up legislation on universal background checks for buying a gun, legislation that was passed by the House last year. And Mitch McConnell will not bring it up for a vote in the Senate. So, and that happens in Harrisburg as well. So I can't see any downsides, quite frankly, to Senator Pittman's proposal. He says he will soon introduce the legislation, and I say, way to go, Senator Pittman. Oh, quick reminder here before we start talking about bananas, before we go bananas. I have a feeling it's going to be a funny conversation. Before we go bananas, reminder that the North Washington Rodeo starts tonight. Now, just because it's a little wet, don't think they're going to cancel. They go rain or shine. In fact, from what I understand, I've never been to the rodeo on a rainy night, but from what I understand, that's great fun. And the cowboy riders and cowgirls and everybody else concerned with the rodeo, they go, even if it gets a little sloppy. So North Washington Rodeo nightly now, starting tonight and running through Saturday at 8 o'clock. North Washington Rodeo, Rodeo Grounds on Route 38, of course. A break, and then back to, talk about banana facts with Steve Gellerman coming up here on It's Your Turn on WISR after these words.
Everyone's trying to beat the heat, so why bring it into your kitchen? There's no need to slave over a hot stove when you can go to Michael's Restaurant. They're cooking burgers, hoagies, pizzas, soups, and salads to feed the entire family. So relax, stay cool, and take the family to Michael's Restaurant, Route 422 in Butler.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare-certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Coming up on the It's Your Turn program, listeners, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking about bananas, believe it or not, on the next segment of the program. Some interesting facts about bananas and how healthy bananas are for you. Our guest is Steve Gellerman. He is a veteran of the natural foods industry for more than 20 years. He joins us by telephone. Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Hi, Dave. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show today.
Well, I just was having a banana here for a snack, so I was...
You gotta love bananas.
Yeah, you have to, as a matter of fact. You have a bunch of... First of all, you've developed a new product we want to talk about momentarily, but we also want to talk about some of the more fascinating facts about bananas that things would never know. For example, and I'm looking off the background information that I got from you, Steve, the average American eats 27 pounds of bananas each year. Holy moly, that's a lot of bananas.
that is a lot of bananas, and that's a true fact. Yeah, the number one selling item in pretty much any supermarket across the country is bananas. I think it's like 9 out of 10 people that go shopping come out with bananas. It's amazing how many bananas are eaten in this country every year by people.
Now, you also say, and this kind of baffles me, humans share roughly 60% of their DNA with bananas. What the heck is that all about, Steve?
That's 60% of the DNA that humans have, they share with bananas. When I read that one, I got to tell you, that's one of the really crazy things that I thought was interesting about bananas. And, you know, there's so many interesting things about bananas. I'll give you another one. You know, they have these people that go around the world and they watch road races like marathons and stuff like that. And they track the guys or the women who run the fastest marathon dressed like a banana all around the world. And there's a group of people that's what they do.
And I'm sure there's a world record for that. Fastest marathon by a person dressed as a banana.
Yeah. It's crazy what people will do.
Well, why not? We have pierogi races at PNC Park in Pittsburgh when the Pirates are playing, and there's four people dressed as pierogies. So,
I think the fastest marathon. Yeah, that's right. It was in London by a guy named Andrew Lawrence, 2 hours and 47 minutes, dressed as a banana. I don't even know why you'd want to dress like a banana running a marathon, but there you go. The first banana milk, which we did, was invented in 2015. If you have the other things with bananas, if you have a headache, you can rub the peels on the inside of the peel. You rub it on your forehead, and it cures headaches. It actually works. I've done this before. Also, with the inside of a peel, if you tape it onto a wart for 3 days in a row, supposedly it goes away. That one I haven't done myself, but that's a medical thing. It also cures, if you do the same thing, you rub it on bug bites, it makes the itching go away.
I assume there's a scientific explanation for that, something on the inside peel of a banana?
Yeah, it's all the nutrients and the vitamins and stuff like that. You put it on it. There's so many diseases and sicknesses and everything that everybody takes pills for and all kinds of things, when it's actually the cures are readily available out in Mother Nature, and they're just there. I mean, another crazy thing, if you want to ripen your fruit quicker, you stick it in a paper bag and you throw a banana in there, and it makes your other fruit ripen quicker. And then actually, there's another one which I thought was really interesting too. Is bananas are so rich in potassium, they're actually mildly radioactive due to a potassium 40 isotope. And here's the strangest thing: most animals can actually see in the ultraviolet spectrum, which is the where potassium 40 you would see that. So animals, like monkeys and stuff, so if you watch them, which I haven't done, but supposedly, if you watch them pick bananas out of a pile, they can actually tell which ones are highest in potassium, and they choose their bananas by seeing the ultraviolet light.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the nutritional profile of bananas then. I mean, a lot of people call bananas a superfood. Is that true, Steve?
Yeah, that's actually very true. Bananas are loaded with probiotics, which that helps with increasing the friendly bacteria for gut health. They're very high. I mean, everyone knows they're very high in fiber. But what you may not know, they actually have a lot of pectin in them, which helps remove heavy metals and toxins from the body. And a lot of women like bananas because the pectin plumps up your skin and it makes you look younger. And it's actually known as one of the top 10 anti-aging fruits out there. And they're also low calorie, no fat, no sodium, no cholesterol. And of course, they contain the vitamin C and B6. What I like best of all, which is pretty cool about bananas, they have a protein, tryptophan, like the turkey, and the brain converts that into serotonin, and that is known to elevate and promote relaxation, and basically it's known as the happy fruit in most of the world.
I have, I'm not a runner myself anymore, but we've had a 5K race here in our area for, many decades now. And they always have bananas for the runners when they finish the race. I assume this is pretty common throughout the world?
Yeah, actually, that's one of the big things we use Banana Way for, which is we call it drinking your bananas instead of eating your bananas. It's a banana milk. So when you go to the gym, instead of toting around a banana or water, you know, you sip on the banana milk through your workout, and it gives you steady energy through the workout. But what the bananas do, it keeps your blood sugar level pretty steady because there's high fiber in the banana, so you digest it slowly, and it gives you a steady calories during your workout, which is fantastic. But the big thing that everyone uses the bananas for is the potassium, because it eliminates cramping in the nerves and the muscle and helps in muscle function. So it's actually the perfect fuel, and it's convenient. You can tote it around, you know, and it gives you the calories, the potassium, and that's why it's known as the perfect food for athletes.
Steve Gellerman is the CEO of Banana Wave, makers of the first non-dairy milk made from whole bananas. Did you develop this, or where did you discover banana milk, Steve?
That's actually a great question. A long time ago, well, not too long ago, about 4 years ago, these really nice kids, they developed this, they brought back a formula, I guess, from they had when they were kids that their grandmother used to make for them. She used to mash up the bananas and put oats in it and vanilla, and she used to give it to them as kids. And then they entered a contest at Florida Atlantic University to come up with a business, like a contest, like come up with a business. So they entered in the banana milk into this contest, and one of the judges on the panel was a friend of mine. He introduced them to me, and then after about a year of going back and forth and looking at what this was, we actually decided to turn it into a company. But when they first showed it to me, they said, oh, banana milk. I'm like, what's banana milk? So they made me a glass of this stuff. They brought it over, and I drank it, and I was like, oh, my God. The first thing I said out of my mouth was, this tastes like a liquid banana. And I love bananas. I eat bananas every day and go to the gym and bike, and I take them hiking, walking, everywhere I go. I've always had them. Now I take, obviously, our banana milk, and you can drink it. It doesn't need refrigeration. I've even taken it hiking. I leave it in a stream to get cold, and I do my circle walk. I come back, it's cold. And there you go.
Are bananas still good to eat when they turn black?
It's funny. Everybody likes bananas at a different level. You know, there's all the way from the green all the way to when they turn black. The blacker they get, it's just the more sugar, the starches turn to sugar, and they get softer. So it's more of a preference. I particularly don't like them black because they're just too mushy for me, mm-hmm. and I don't like them too green or, you know, bright yellow. The starches haven't converted to the sugar yet, and you just don't get the taste. So I kind of like it right there in the middle.
Bananas only grow in tropical climates. Am I correct on that, Steve Gellerman?
Yeah, in the most part of the world, yeah, that's the tropical climates where they grow. You can actually grow them in Southern California. I don't think there's any big farming out there of bananas, but yeah, they mostly come from in the tropical climates. We use the Cavendish variety, which has been bred over the years to not have seeds, so that's what everybody likes. So if you're actually going to grow a banana tree now, you actually have to take a sprout or something off an existing one and kind of clone it and plant it somewhere else. You can't grow from seeds anymore.
How big? I've never seen one up close and personal. How big is a banana tree?
They can get to 60, 70 feet high.
Oh.
They're actually pretty tall. And actually, the funny part about it is the banana tree is actually not a tree. It's an herb, and it's the world's largest herb. And everybody calls it a tree, but it's actually an herb. It's something that is classified by the FDA because the banana has seeds in the inside, so it's actually classified as a berry, not even a fruit. Like a strawberry has the seeds on the outside, so even the strawberry is actually not even a berry. I don't know what they classify it as, but it's not a berry, and bananas are actually a berry.
Now we're really confused. Strawberries are not berries, and bananas are not fruit.
Until I started, I always ate bananas, so whatever. I don't you know. But when I started the banana milk and I started doing all this research into what it is and all the benefits of it, all these odd things just keep popping up. And I look at it, I'm like, banana isn't actually a berry? I mean, right, it's kind of a weird thing. And there's so many other things. There's another one in China. They passed a law banning people. And this is a weird one. They banned people from seductively eating a banana on live anything, live TV, radio, whatever. And I don't even know who thinks of that kind of stuff.
Well, but, that's China. Whatever they do in China. When I was a kid, I used to love banana popsicles. Now, back in those days, you never thought about looking to see whether it was a natural flavor or some kind of artificial one, and I have no idea. I don't even know whether they still make banana popsicles, but boy, I loved it when I was a kid.
I like those, the creamsicles with the white inside.
Oh,
those
yeah.
are delicious, the
yeah.
banana ones.
I know, those too, yeah. Now you're making me hungry. I'm ready for one right now. Hey,
yeah.
Chatting with the top banana, he's known as the top banana. That's Steve Gellerman. Is there a website where people who are interested can learn more about your company, Steve?
Sure, it's called Banana Wave, just like the brand name, BananaWave.love. So it's BananaWave.love, and you can go there and you can read all interesting things that we talked about today. It'll show you the different flavors, where to get it, what the uses are for it. And again, that's bananawave.love.
Well, thanks for talking with us, Steve, and watch out for banana peels when you're walking down the sidewalk, right?
That's true. Yeah, thanks for having me so much, Dave.
Sure, good to talk with you. So long.
You too.
Introducing Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services. It's Butler area's newest funeral home, located at 140 Newcastle Road. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Local, this is an entirely new idea, offering twice the service at half the cost. Spencer D. Geibel is a hometown man, offering hometown services at hometown prices. More options, better service, less cost. Please call for information about pre-arrangements or pre-funding or the transfer of arrangements made with other funeral homes. Yes, that can be done. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, again, located at 140 Newcastle Road in Butler, about halfway up Newcastle Hill. Phone them at 724-287-4042 or check online at spencerdgeibel.com. Once again, the phone number is 724-287-4042. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, not affiliated with any other local funeral home.
Hello, I'm Nancy Lendyak, and I serve Central Electric Cooperative members as the Armstrong County Board Representative and Chair of the Annual Meeting Board Committee. I wanted to take a moment and personally invite all Central Electric members to attend our annual meeting on August 23rd. This event is a great opportunity to meet with cooperative board members and staff, as well as elected officials. It also offers live music, a delicious meal, and a chance to win prizes. This year, there will even be drone demonstrations, information on solar panels, a health fair, and more. Children ages 5 to 10 are also encouraged to attend and can enjoy a variety of activities and prizes just for them. Reserve your spot today by calling Central Electric or visiting www.central.coop. At Central Electric, safety is everyone's responsibility. My personal safety goal is to respect road flooded warnings and to turn around, don't drown. What's yours? This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
At Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, they believe in the power of the human touch and recognize that when one part of your body is not functioning properly, your entire well-being suffers. It is their goal to treat you as family and give you the uninterrupted healing time you deserve. Visit them to experience for yourself the excitement of feeling like you can tackle the world professionally, personally, and recreationally. Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center. Quality time spent with each patient. Call 724-283-0518 or visit applewoodchiro.com.
I think we have a great novel to talk about, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is author Jane Healy, who joins us to talk about The Beantown Girls. First of all, Jane, hello. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Ever since I heard about your book, The Beantown Girls, I have been anxious to chat with you. I'm a bit of an amateur historian about World War II. And that's where your book is set, right? That's the era.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yes, it's based on the true stories of the Red Cross Club Mobile Girls in the European Theater of Operations during World War II.
The Red Cross Club Mobile Girls, did you say?
Yes, yes. And, you know, if you're like a lot of people, or like me, I had never heard of these women before. And, when I stumbled upon a picture of them on Pinterest, actually, I thought, what is a clubmobile? And it turns out it was basically the military came to the Red Cross and said, it's wonderful you have these huge clubs in the cities, in the major cities in Europe, but we need more for the guys out in the field. What can you do? And they came up with the idea of Red Cross clubs on wheels, staffed by usually three women, and they would go at or to the front lines of the war and serve coffee and donuts and play music and hand out cigarettes and candy and really just try to boost morale by, you know, bringing a little bit of home to the troops at the front.
Well, I must confess, I'm pretty well read on World War II, particularly European theater. And I knew of the USO, of course, and the Red Cross, of course. I had never heard of the Red Cross Clubmobile Girls until I got a review copy of your book.
Yeah, it's incredible that they haven't been recognized more in history, to be honest. I feel like their stories have been kind of forgotten, and that was one of the things that intrigued me about the story.
The lead character, well, actually, there are three of them, but let's talk a little bit about one character in particular, Fiona Denning. Who is Fiona?
So Fiona Denning is from Boston, as are her two best friends, and that's part of why the reason that it's called the Beantown Girls, because Beantown is one of Boston's nicknames. And she's you know, kind of really driven and ambitious, and working at the mayor's office in the city of Boston when her fiance goes missing in the war. His plane is shot down in Germany, and she doesn't know anything more than that. And so she's kind of devastated and adrift and feeling lost, and sees a ad when she goes to the movies, a film reel about these Clubmobile girls in Europe and how they're recruiting all over the U.S. for them, and she decides to apply and go over there and ultimately try to find out what happened to him, but she kind of keeps that a secret at first from her friends.
Mm-hmm. And she recruits a couple of her pals to go with her?
Yeah, she recruits her two best friends, Viv and Dottie. Viv is working at an advertising agency, very talented artist, but really just working as a secretary, and as it was in those days, you know, very very hard for a woman to get ahead in a lot of fields, but definitely in advertising. So she's feeling kind of bored with her job and her life, and so she decides to apply, and then they both convince Dottie, who's a music teacher, and has, you know, wonderful musical talents that could help her get into the, could help her fill the role. They convince her, even though she's pretty shy, to come with them and go on this adventure.
Can you imagine a young woman, or three young women in this case, deciding to do this during World War II? The height of battle was still going on, raging across Europe. Can you imagine them?
You know, the more I read these stories, and the more I was amazed. I'm like, how did they do this? And I think some of them just felt desperate to do something. You know, they had their brothers and their best friends and their fiancés and husbands all going to war, and they felt like they were stuck at the home front, you know, knitting hats or whatever, you know, whatever role they could do at home, but they were desperate to do something more because they were young and able, and this opportunity came along, and they jumped at it.
Well, I'm sure most of our listeners have heard of, Rosie the Riveter, the iconic woman who went to work in a factory when most of the men were overseas. I read several years ago, and I can't believe I'd never thought of this before, we were cranking out tens of thousands of planes for the war effort here in the United States. Most of the boys, the flyers, were already overseas, and I'd never wondered about how they got these new planes to Europe. Well, you know how they did it? They had women flyers. I mean, obviously they didn't participate in combat back then, but they're the ones that flew these brand new planes to Europe. And until I read that several years ago, I'd never given it a thought.
I know. Isn't it amazing, these stories of these women? That was when I said that about the women on the home front, not to discount the efforts of the women on the home front, which there were many. But these stories that, that's extraordinary that those women flew those planes. And yet, I've never heard that story before. And one of my friends actually just wrote a book about them called The Spitfire Girls. And I had never heard about them either. And these lesser-known stories of women in the war effort, I think, really deserve to be celebrated, and they're so fascinating.
You have an actual date for your... And by the way, The Beantown Girls is what we call historical fiction, listeners. There really were, obviously, Red Cross Club Mobile girls, but our guest Jane Healy is using that as a basis for her novel, The Beantown Girls. You set an actual date for your action, 1944, right?
I did, and that was based on my research. I set, July, August 1944. The Club Mobile Girl program had grown so successful that they did a huge recruiting effort in the U.S. and started sending more girls over, because originally it started out the Club Mobiles were primarily in the United Kingdom, but after D-Day they started sending them to the continent. So that's why I chose the latter part of the war, when there was a real push for Club Mobile girls and Club Mobiles to go to the continent.
Yeah, and your timing is perfect, because after D-Day, it took a while for the Allies to break out of Normandy. It was tough sledding for a while, and then eventually they did break out and they started moving across occupied France. But it was in the summer of 1944 that they really started to move, and this would have been prior to the Battle of the Bulge at Bastogne in Luxembourg, which took place that winter. December, yes. 1944. So the date that you've picked for the setting for your novel is spot on. That's just where it would have happened.
Yes, exactly. And there was the women. I did a lot of different research, but the women of Europe, the European Club Mobile Girl women, the women who served over there, were meticulous in their diaries and their letters home and their journals, and they just really brought to life in those documents what they experienced. And so they gave me my story. It was such a gift. I went to Harvard University, has an amazing library called the Schlesinger Library, and they have all these archived materials of American women's history, and they had 13 boxes of letters and diaries and ration cards and pictures, and they even had a uniform of all Club Mobile girls archive material. And these women gave me my timeline. They gave me sort of their trajectory of where they went all over the European theater, including the Battle of the Bulge is a really big part of the book, actually. And I didn't know much about that battle until I wrote this story.
Coldest winter that Europe had experienced in decades. That December of 1944 and into January of 45, brutal weather during the Battle of the Bulge. So the Red Cross Club Mobile girls wore uniforms. That's depicted on the cover of your book, actually.
They did. They wore uniforms. They had sort of dress uniforms that, of course, were skirts and little jackets, and they had to wear, high heels. But then for the field, they had heavier wool jackets and pants, which they called clown suits. Some of them didn't love them, but they kept them warm and they did the job. So
I can only guess how the young men, and they were all very young at that time, how they must have looked forward to the arrival
Yeah, they really were, and they were very young. And I, you know, it was the one of the things that was interesting is the Club Mobile Girl program to become a Club Mobile Girl. It was it was a sophisticated recruitment campaign, and they only chose one out of six women, and they had to be over 25 years old and educated with some work experience. And I think that was by design because the troops that they served were often just out of high school, you know, and so these women were, you know, professionals and also kind of big sisters to the soldiers at the front.
Older women, for goodness sakes, in their mid-20s.
Yes, older women. Older women, 25, 26. not so old. But, yeah, so I thought that was interesting as well.
Hey, folks, we have a few more minutes to chat with, what a wonderful guest, Jane Healy. We need to take a break. We're talking about her a novel, historical fiction. It's entitled The Beantown Girls. Beantown, one word, The Beantown Girls. We'll pick up our conversation with Jane here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
In 2019, Tri-Rivers celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
I'm Dr. Scott Rainey, an orthopedic back and neck surgeon at Tri-Rivers. Whether I'm in the office treating patients for conditions such as cervical or lumbar stenosis, or in the operating room performing innovative procedures like disc replacements, I'm proud to care for patients in the Butler community. To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of the It's Your Turn program, we're talking with author Jane Healy about her novel, The Beantown Girls. This is not your first novel, Jane. You wrote an earlier book as well. What was that?
That one was called The Saturday Evening Girls Club, and it was also based on a true, it's fiction, but based on a true story in history about this group of Jewish and Italian immigrant women in Boston's North End at the turn of the 20th century. And they were, they created this club to support each other, and also the librarian in the North End and a philanthropist, Helen Sturrow, we have Sturrow Drive in Boston, for those of you who have been here, was a very well-known philanthropist, and they brought in professors and doctors and lawyers all from all over the city and gave these women kind of an informal higher education. And they were really, well, as a group, they were well ahead of their time. I mean, this is, we're talking 1908. So, yeah, I wrote that story, came out almost exactly 2 years ago.
Saturday Evening Girls Club. Is that still in print, Jane? Is that still available?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to your current novel, The Beantown Girls. How did you discover these Red Cross Club Mobile girls? Did you stumble upon it accidentally while you were reading, or did somebody tell you about it? How'd that happen?
It was really one of those happy accidents. I was searching for my next story, and I had always been fascinated with World War II history. My grandfather was in the Navy, on Navy ships in Europe and Africa. He was a firefighter in World War II. And I had originally been interested in things that were happening here in Boston in World War II, including there was several thousand POWs, Italian POWs, on islands off the coast in Boston Harbor, which I thought was kind of an interesting angle, and I started going down that route. But I came across this picture of four women in a field, and I didn't recognize their uniforms, but it was clear they were wearing uniforms, and they were kind of all laughing and jostling with each other. And the caption underneath was you know, somewhere in England, I can't remember exactly where, and Red Cross Club Mobile Girls, you know, it was, I think it was March 1944 or something like that. And that is what, you know, piqued my interest, because, as I said, I had never heard of these women, and I had to start, you know, chasing down that story.
Interesting when you mentioned Italian POWs taken prisoner by Americans were held on islands off the coast of Boston. I never knew that before.
Yeah, there's several islands in Boston Harbor, and so they set up, you know, it was prison, but it was you know, camps basically, and this is where they put all these Italian POWs. And then when Italy switched sides in the war, many of the POWs started to work with the Allies, but some of them didn't. Some of them were not, you know, were not happy about the turn in the war. So, but if you decide to work with the Allies, your fate was was much better here in Boston. So it was really interesting.
By the way, here in western Pennsylvania, we had a camp that was set up near the Allegheny National Forest for German POWs, Germans who had been captured in Europe and then brought to the United States as prisoners, and they were held at a camp here in western Pennsylvania. Fascinating stuff when you dig into the history of World War II, isn't it, Jane, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, I didn't even know there were POWs over here. You know, I remember reading about the Germans when I was reading about the Italian POWs in Boston, because I think there was another camp of German POWs, like, in the Midwest, and some of these POWs fell in love with local women, and, you know, there's some really interesting stuff, interesting stories.
Let me ask you a little bit about the writing of this book. Your lead character, Fiona Denning, has two friends, Viv and Dottie, that she convinces to go with her. Do you happen to have three friends that you were drawing upon for research or background here, Jane?
You know, that is such a great question. I get that question quite a bit with my other novel as well, which is about four friends. And I have, a group of close friends from my high school days and, you know, many, many years ago that I'm still tight with. But all my characters are so much, by the time I start writing about them, they're so much who they are. They have nothing really to do with anyone I know in real life. And some of my friends ask, I'm like, no, it's not you. Don't worry, I'm not writing about you. It's fun to get that question, though.
I know when I was introduced to your characters, and by the way, folks, we're talking about the Beantown Girls, in case you're joining us a little bit late here on It's Your Turn today, written by Jane Healy, who chats with us by phone from, in case you haven't guessed by now, Boston. You have Fiona, you've got Viv, and you've got Dottie. When I first heard of Dottie, you know, we're talking about strong women here, strong women characters. First thing that popped into my mind was the Dottie character in the great film A League of Their Own. Remember that? The women professional baseball players during World War II?
I adore that movie. And in fact, my agent pitched this book as A League of Their Own meets Saving Private Ryan.
Wow.
And
I had no idea.
Yeah. And Dottie was a pretty popular name back then. I just love the name.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm not the only one that League of Their Own popped into their mind when I started reading your book. Did it take you a long time to write this? Obviously, it was a labor of joy. How long did it take you, Jane?
Well, you know, for the proposal, which was for my publisher, I had to provide three chapters and a synopsis, and I spent probably 6 months doing research and putting together outline, synopsis, three chapters. And then when they agreed, you know, when they gave me my contract, I had another 6 months to write the rest of the story. So it took me, 6 months to finish it. And it was a tighter deadline than I realized when I signed the contract. My agent was like, you want to push back and get in a couple more months? I'm like, no, this is fine. I can do this, because I was so psyched to write the story. But it was intense. It was an intense 6 months. We had a lot of takeout in my house and a lot of long weekends working at the library and stuff.
You mentioned that your grandfather had served in World War II. My dad served in World War II. He was so young, it just frightens me to think about it.
Amazing. Yeah. These young men went over there, and you wonder how they did it. You know, how they did it without, you think about how, you know, I have a 15-year-old daughter. I can't imagine 3 years from now her going off to war. It's just incredible.
Well, I can hardly imagine my dad doing it either. He was in the 82nd Airborne. He jumped into Normandy the night before D-Day and was subsequently, about a week later, captured and spent the rest of the war on a POW camp.
Amazing.
I actually went to I'm talking your ear off here, I'm sorry. I went to Normandy several years ago because I was researching, you know, my father's story, and wow, how sobering was that to be. I spent about a week in the Normandy, Utah Beach, you know, that area, the Cotentin Peninsula. Unbelievable. Did you ever go to Europe to do any research, or were you able to find what you needed at the Harvard Library?
I really wanted to, but the time was so tight, and I felt like I had been to aside from Bastogne, I had been to pretty much everywhere in the story. So I felt like, okay, I have at least I had the perspective of these what these places are like in real life, and then I relied on pictures and my research at Harvard, and you know, there's some amazing old photos now online, pretty much everywhere. Of that time and those places that were also extremely helpful.
Let me ask you one more question. If you could have readers take one thing away from your book, The Beantown Girls, what would that be, Jane Healy?
Well, first, I think just learning about these women, and I hope the story honors these women properly, the Red Cross Club Mobile Girls. And also, this is a story about three friends who changed their minds about their future and what and their future possibilities, and it changed the trajectory of their lives forever. And I think that's a good message for life, too.
I'm into that. It's a good read, folks. Historical fiction, but based on real events, certainly real events, and a real organization, the Red Cross
yes.
Club Mobile Girls. Title of the book is The Beantown Girls, Jane Healy. If you're looking for her online, it's H-E-A-L-E-Y, Jane Healy. Jane, what a delight to chat with you today. Thanks for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. Thank you, Dave.
You know, we are into late summer now. It's Labor Day, not all that far away. But it is not too early to begin thinking about a holiday trip as we approach the holiday season. And Butler Motor Tours here in Butler has a number of great ideas for you. How about a trip to the Biltmore Estates for Christmas? That's down in Asheville, North Carolina. Fabulous. They're taking a trip down there, a three-day trip in mid-November, right before Thanksgiving. The Biltmore Estate Christmas. Or how about a bundle of Christmas show tour in Lancaster, eastern Pennsylvania? How about going to the Great Smoky Mountains for Christmas? Great Smoky Mountain Christmas four shows at Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. That trip is a three-day trip in early December. Or go to Bethlehem, PA, Christmas City, USA, and see the fabulous Radio City Rockettes in New York on the same trip, three-day trip in early December. And, of course, they've done this for many years, a one-night trip down to Ogilvy Park to see the Festival of Lights there. These and many other holiday trip ideas, booking now at Butler Motor Tours, a local company. They've been around for more than 75 years, taking folks from our area to places near and far for a day or two or a week or two. Check online for all the details on these and other trips. Butler Motor Tours, online at butlerbus.com. butlerbus.com.
Don't miss this Thursday night when master storyteller Mr. Bill May presents The History of Alameda Park, Butler's Disneyland, at 6:30 p.m. in the Carousel Shelter of Butler County's Alameda Park.
Hi, this is Bill May. Journey back in time with me to when Alameda Park was an amusement park filled with a roller coaster, merry-go-round, Ferris wheel, dance hall, and a boating lake. Dozens of rare photographs and stories will make the park come alive once again. I'll even take the audience on a virtual ride on its roller coaster. Join me this Thursday at 6:30 in the Carousel Shelter of Alameda Park for the History of Alameda Park, Butler's Disneyland, and it is free.
Listeners, have you ever wondered about finding your true purpose in life? If so, I think most of us are in that position once in a while. You'll be interested in our conversation coming up on It's Your Turn here on WISR with John Sambolino, who's written a book entitled Is God in That Bottle Cap? John, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here today.
Thanks, Dave. Nice to be with you.
What inspired you to write this book, John?
Well, I've been on this spiritual search for a long, long time. I've been meditating 2 to 3 hours a day for over 40 years. I do Tai Chi and Qigong and yoga and read hundreds of books on meditation and spirituality. And I was always planning on writing a book about this, you know, but I just kept putting it off. But I'd talk to family and friends, and they'd say, oh, you know, you got to write a book. This is great. Like, I'm just not ready. And then finally a friend of mine convinced me, you just got to sit down and do this. So I said, okay, and I pulled out a stack of notebooks, and I started writing. It took a little over a year, and I wrote the book.
How did you come up with the title? That's unusual.
Yeah, Is God in That Bottle Cap? years ago, I used to swim at South Carolina, and one of the guys I swim with was a Christian minister, and he was always telling me, oh, you got to go to church. It's so important, religion, this and that. And I go, well, you know, I meditate a couple hours a day. I don't need to go to church. I think meditation is kind of my religion. He says, no, you got to go to church. It's so important. So one day we're walking out to our cars. He's going in again. And I get to my car, and there's a bottle cap lying on the ground. And I go, hey, Dan, see that bottle cap? I go, was God in that bottle cap? And he kind of looked at me waiting for a punchline. I said, no, seriously, if God is everywhere, is he in that bottle cap, or is he just everywhere except in that bottle cap? And then I said, how about the bullet that shot Kennedy? I said, was God in the bullet that shot Kennedy, or is God just everywhere except for the bullet that shot Kennedy, or except in that bottle cap? So then I went on to explain to him that if God is everywhere, it has to be the ultimate building block of the physical universe. And we had a long conversation about religion and the nature of reality, but the bottle cap just happened to be lying was on the ground. It could have been a clothespin, but just happened to be a bottle cap lying there.
Talking with inspirational author John Sambalina, did your search for life's purpose take you to examine spirituality in other parts of the world, John?
Well, yeah, other religions, everything. I mean, my thing is cast a wide net. I think that all the religions, the founding members, Christ, Buddha, Krishna, whatever, they're all experiencing the same reality. They're talking about it in different ways, but it's all the same reality. So I think you need to cast a wide net. So I read things from all religions, all traditions, all methods of meditations, and I've been to a lot of different places. I've been just to check it out. I've been to Nepal and Bhutan and India and Egypt, been all over the place. But you realize it's not the place. The place is not going to give you the answer, and the book is not going to give you the answer, and somebody telling you is not going to give you the answer. The answer lies within. You've got to just settle your mind and go within to discover what's always there. It's just hidden.
You've meditated daily for decades. Do you think the world would be better off if more people did that, John?
I think absolutely. I mean, you know, the problem with most people is a lot of us, we're just stressed out. The world is a very stressful place to live in, and we really have no way to get rid of stress. You know, sleeping will get rid of stress. That's the only really natural way we have is sleeping, but it's hard to get a good night's sleep if you're stressed out. But meditation releases stress big time at a much deeper level. And as the stress comes out of our system, we become much healthier. I mean, 75 to 90% of all doctor visits are for stress-related issues. At the same time, our mind starts restructuring itself. We start becoming more calm, more relaxed. We have more clarity, focus, but greater productivity and creativity. We just become, you know, nicer people. Things just don't ruffle our feathers so much. So, yeah, it's very, very important to learn to meditate.
One final question. What are some of the distractions that keep us from pursuing better things, John Sambalina?
The world in general. The world in general is the distraction. See, we think that the answers lie on the outside. We're all looking for happiness, and we're looking for it on the outside, this, that, this person, that, this money, this whatever, when actually happiness is our true nature and all lies within. So we have to have a belief that there's something else going on besides what's on the outside, what our senses are picking up. And instead of going outward to find what we want or what we think we need, we go inward. Meditation takes our mind, instead of going out with the senses, it settles the mind and goes inward to where thoughts come from, and then beyond those, that where they come from, into the transcendence. And that's the thing. You have to have a belief that something going on the inside besides what's going on the outside.
Religion, science, meditation. Is God in that bottle cap? By John Sambalina. Nice to talk with you, John. Thanks for joining us for a few minutes here today.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Sure. So long now.
It's time to get your spurs and cowboy hats on, because the North Washington Rodeo is on its way. Set aside August 13th through the 17th for five exciting nights of extreme rodeo action. The North Washington Rodeo has been named one of the top five outdoor rodeos in the country. Come see the world champions compete for huge prize money and watch the thrilling action as it happens at the famous North Washington Rodeo Grounds, Route 38 North in Butler County. Go online at nwvfd.com to get your tickets. It's early and save.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Hey, you heard a North Washington Rodeo commercial just a moment or so ago there.
I have some tickets to give away. If you're interested in going, call now at 724-283-2525. The North Washington Rodeo begins tonight and runs every night through Saturday night, 8 o'clock each evening.
Sing in the glow of a star that I know of. We're lovers, enjoy peace of mind. Let us leave the confusion and all disillusion behind.
Yeah, 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 all behind.
Just like birds of a feather, a rainbow together we'll find. Giving me wings. Yeah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. Let's fly way up to the clouds. Away from the maddening crowds. We could sing in the glow of a star that I know of. Well, lovers, enjoy peace of mind. Let us leave the confusion and all disillusion behind.
Yeah, 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 all behind.
Just like birds of a feather, a rainbow together we'll find.